Hey everyone, welcome back to But Why Though, the podcast where we talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, I wanted to make sure to let you all know that for our 50th episode, we are doing an Ask Me Anything. So you, the listener, gets to ask us anything. And when you do, you will get put into a drawing for a special goodie box. At the very least, you'll get a shirt and some things, and at the very most, you'll get a boat. Possibly.
You can buy a boat. You get a rowboat.
A rowboat?
Yeah.
A hand signed paper boat?
Yes.
Boat hat.
So
I was thinking boat hat.
So send us those questions. They can be about anything, doesn't have to be pop culture related, just something you want to know about us. Me, Adrian, or Matt. And if you want any more extra content or you want access to our research notes and shows a little bit earlier, head on over to patreon.com/butwhythoughpc. And if you want to show your undying love for us across your chest, you can go ahead and buy a t-shirt. We have a storefront at TeePublic. I believe it's TeePublic/butwhythoughpc, like everything else. Go ahead and check them out. We have a whole bunch of designs, including Anakin is the Nickelback of Star Wars, which is my personal favorite at the moment.
Yeah. Also, if you want to show your undying love across your chest, I expect a tattoo, not a t-shirt.
So
right on the heart.
So thanks for all your support and enjoy the show. Back everyone, and today to wrap up our Star Wars fest, we are going to be covering the original trilogies. That is episode 4, episode 5, and episode 6. As always, I'm your host Kate, and I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And to start off this episode, I just want to ask you guys, what was your first experience with the original trilogy? Because obviously this stuff was around way before we all were alive. So, what was your first experience with them, and which one's your favorite? Matt?
First off, I want to say I'm so excited this is the last Star Wars thing we're doing. I feel like Bob Costas in basketball playoffs. I'm worn out. But, as far as my first experience goes with Star Wars, I honestly can't really remember. I know as a kid I watched them. We had them on VHS, but I never obviously saw them in the movie theater because I wasn't that old. But
back in my day.
Yeah, it wasn't that day. but as far as I remember watching them a lot when I was younger, like I said, we had all the movies. My parents weren't big into Star Wars at all, but for some reason we did own them. I don't know why, actually, now that I think about it.
Because I knew I was going to come into your life and you had to give them to me as my first gift.
Yeah, that's what it was. as far as a favorite one, I guess probably The Empire Strikes Back would be, I guess, my favorite one.
Adrian?
So my grandma had them on VHS and still does to this day. So that's when I first watched them. I don't know what age it was. Like, I can't like remember the day, but I know that I've watched like the VHS multiple times before like any of the special edition stuff ever came out and things like that. So, and Empire for sure is my favorite.
Yeah, I feel like I came out of the womb watching Star Wars. Like, I really don't remember a time where Star Wars wasn't in my life, at least in some way, whether it was an action figure or a movie. When I was growing up, I only had Return of the Jedi on VHS, because my cousins gave it to me, because I don't think they liked it that much looking back now. And I ended up breaking it because I watched it so much. And now, so then my favorite one was Return of the Jedi, but my favorite one now is hands down Empire, which we'll talk a little bit why that's my favorite one as we get into the show notes.
I do remember being very young and like feeling like I was on my deathbed, sick from school and watching all the movies.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's supposed to highlight the movies, but I do remember being like half dead.
Half dead watching the movies.
Yes.
Having fever dreams of Force ghosts.
Pretty much.
So as we move into this, I will be the Jedi Master. I don't want to call myself a Jedi Master. I'm going to just go ahead and be the Force Ghost Yoda of the podcast right now and lead us through this awesome episode that I'm really excited for. And for me, the original trilogy, like, I know it was way before I was alive, but this to me, like, this was my very first Star Wars, and this is what I loved even beyond, like, going into the theaters to watch the prequels. Like this was me so much. So to get started, Star Wars, if you don't know what it is, I'm gonna give you a one sentence thing about it, because yeah. Star Wars is an American epic space opera media franchise centered on a film series created by George Lucas, and it depicts the adventures of characters a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. The first of these movies is titled just Star Wars, or Episode 4, A New Hope, and this happened in 1977, and it was directed and written by George Lucas. It is the second most successful movie of all time when you come to the domestic gross, and this is when we look at adjusted, and this is right underneath Gone with the Wind, and it sits at $1.6 billion adjusted for inflation. Its budget was $11 million, and it made $775.4 million non-adjusted.
All that money, you know that Harrison Ford took home $10,000 for this movie?
What?
He made $10,000 for this movie.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Mark Hamill took home like an obscene amount. I think Mark Hamill took home like $600,000, something like that, because he had like what he made, and then plus he had like a percentage of like movie profit. So he went, you know, before, you know, Robert Downey Jr. is taking home percentages of stuff, he did it too. I think Alex Guinness too. I think Alex Guinness took home like 2.2% of like the profit, something like that. So he made bank off this movie. And then Harrison Ford took home $10,000.
God. Because I know that's one thing that, like, Carrie was very open about, too. She's like, I pretty much sold away my likeness, and I've seen none of that money from any of that franchise. Star Wars financially is just a powerhouse, and nothing really touches it for the most part when it comes to, like, modern films, even. And Gone with the Wind is number one, and that was a movie from way, 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 way back then.
You know what's also sad about this?
What?
This was the movie that finally passed Jaws.
Yes, it was. It was the first movie that passed Jaws, and it was John Williams did the score for Jaws and Star Wars.
So the real question is, how much does John Williams have?
John Williams probably has a lot of money, because I'll get into why John Williams is, like, a phenomenal, God, like, score maker orchestration person. I totally don't have the right word for that, and that's bad.
That is pretty bad. I was going to say composer.
Yes, okay. Composer. That's
composer God is what I'm going with.
Composer guy. So, A New Hope focuses on the Rebel Alliance, which is led by Princess Leia, and its attempt to destroy the Galactic Empire space station, the Death Star. This conflict disrupts the isolated life of farmhand Luke Skywalker, who inadvertently acquires two droids that possess stolen architectural plans for the Death Star. When the Empire begins a destructive search for the missing droid, Skywalker accompanies Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi on a mission to return the plans to the Rebel Alliance and rescue Leia from her imprisonment by the Empire. So, I was kind of debating on how to do this. I didn't want to do a breakdown so much as just kind of talk about the movies and bring up the but why those, a lot similar to what Adrian did in our last episode for the prequels, as we go through, because there are a lot of them and it doesn't make sense to put them separate. And I think one of the reasons that Star Wars, or A New Hope specifically, is so iconic is it introduces us, obviously, to farmhand Luke, who is now, like, one of the most recognizable heroes in pop culture today.
I agree.
And not only that, it gives us a story of a nothing into a somebody, and it also gives us one of the most iconic moments in film, and this was, the, like, it was across a whole bunch of lists, so I didn't even bother putting it down here. But the crawl mixed with John Williams' opening theme, like, that just shook people to their core. Nobody was expecting it. We're also introduced for the first time in A New Hope to non-anthropomorphic aliens, or rather less so than the way Star Trek did. So what we get in A New Hope is we get a whole bunch of different alien races who are farther from being human than they are human. So it isn't just a human with small prosthetics on their face and they still keep their human figure. You get a lot of other aliens shown. And that's one of the things that A New Hope is known for, not only in bringing out these aliens, but really revolutionizing and bringing CGI, and when I say CGI, but like visual effects back from the grave that it was heading to. The visual effects was done by Industrial Light and Magic, and at this point, visual effects had pretty much started to die out, because the majority of 70s film were all these gritty cop movies, and the like just showing you the darkness of society. Like, there was no grand... there were no grand sets. There was no, you know, the sci-fi of the 50s and the 60s was pretty much gone. And so what ILM does here in A New Hope is it revitalizes, one, that interest in fans and moviegoers from seeing large sweeping sets and, you know, non-humans on screen. But it also lets filmmakers know that they can do it. And in the end, ILM ended up winning about, I think it's either 15 or 16 Oscars for its advancement in the field of visual effects. And overall, A New Hope is really what its name entitles. In the 70s, you have a culture that's really fighting back from the Vietnam War. They have a completely bleak outlook on life and a bleak outlook in the films that they get, with stuff like Taxi Driver, Apocalypse Now, The Godfather. All of these things are really dark, and what A New Hope does is it brings out that hope in the darkness, and this cements probably one of the big main themes of the entire Star Wars franchise, from the prequels to the sequel trilogy and the anthology series, of having hope. And that starts here. And that's something that I'm very happy that the franchise hasn't lost, because I think it's something that makes it really unique.
I agree. Do you know the original name of A New Hope, like before they changed it to A New Hope?
No.
Adventures of Luke Starkiller, as taken from the Journal of Wheelis Saga 1, The Star Wars. They were legit going to call this movie that, and then they changed
it. I knew his last name was going to be that, but I had no clue it was going to be that freaking long of a title.
Yeah. I lost a tiebreaker to this question. We were doing the Star Wars pub crawl. Yeah. I lost to this question because I didn't know that it was like that ridiculously long name.
God, that is a deserves ridiculously a long name. What about for you guys? Where does New Hope, like, do y'all have any, like, I guess, feelings associated with New Hope? Any favorite parts?
I thought it was very boring.
I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah. I mean, I think it's different. I think it's slightly different for us just because obviously we weren't alive in the 70s. Like, one of my parents wasn't even alive when this movie came out. So for me, like, I just remember watching all of these movies back to back. So I don't know, like, the... when this first came out, like, I don't have that experience of it first coming out and then waiting 3 years for, you know, the sequel of all sequels to come out. Yeah. So when I'm watching A New Hope, I'm kind of just waiting to get to Empire, to be honest. Cause it is slow. Like it's slow. It's a huge setup movie, but when you're watching all these movies back to back, like I did recently leading up to The Last Jedi, like it works, but I don't think I can understand why people think it's boring and why, people don't think that Star Wars really, really took off until Empire Strikes Back, because this movie kind of is a little boring. Yeah. It does take a while to get going, and there is a lot of just, like, sweeping scenes and then kind of just watching people run around. Like, we watch Obi-Wan run around the Death Star for, like, 10 minutes. Yeah. In this movie.
I do like...
But with that... sorry. That being said, my favorite part definitely is the score. Like, the score is just ridiculous. Even going back and rewatching it with all the great scores that we have now, like just listening to it, it's just a, when I think of A New Hope, I think of how great the score is from the very, very beginning of this whole crazy ride.
And when it comes to best scores from the last 100 years, according to AFI, so the American Film Institute, this is number one.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
And John Williams has multiple on there. He has E.T., Jaws, this movie called Laura. He has the most out of the top 25 for the last 100 years out of anybody else. And it's in the ranks with stuff like Gone with the Wind, Lawrence Olivier, Psycho, The Godfather, and Jaws, and obviously Jaws. That's kind of what surrounds it. And when you look at it, the reason that this is really significant for A New Hope is you don't have an orchestra. You don't have a symphony accompanying sci-fi at this time. What you have is you have contemporary music or like the flash, oh, like that type of stuff. Like, that's what you have for sci-fi, which George Lucas did try to make, Flash Gordon.
Yeah.
But, so to go this way, this was Lucas saying, I'm going to do something different, and it is really going to be something as extravagant as it can be.
Yeah. I think you get that, now that I'm thinking about it, my favorite scene definitely is the Mos Eisley Cantina scene.
Yeah.
Like, that's definitely my favorite, just because from what you said at the beginning, and something that we've talked about multiple times on social media and on the podcast, is that this is like a space opera, and all of the aliens in that in 1977 is amazing, and it's a shame that we don't get more of it in our movies now.
Yeah, I agree. That's about what I was going to say. Who was number two, I guess, on scores?
Number two was Gone with the Wind.
No, that's not what... Composer scores.
Oh, composer scores?
Like, yeah, like, what the hell are you talking about?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
Which is also a testament, because after A New Hope and the Star Wars franchise, you have just Steven Spielberg just controlling this entire, like, 30 years of film. And John Williams along with it, too. I think for me, one of the most important scenes, too, and probably one of the ones that stands out the most, and it doesn't happen until an hour in because the movie is really boring. I agree with both of you. But it's the first time we see the Force used in a tangible way, and that's the Force choke. And it's still great to see for the first time, like, happening within that movie.
Yeah. He don't take no shit.
So, moving on to Empire Strikes Back, this came out in 1980, and it was directed by Irvin Krishner after Lucas said that he would never direct again, which he obviously broke in 1999. this is the 13th of all time for domestic gross with adjusted profit. I couldn't figure out what that number was. Is it 876 million?
No.
Is it billion?
Yes.
So it's $876
billion? Yes, $753,100,000.
Okay, so $876,000,000, $753,000,000, and $100.
Yeah, or you just put $8.76 billion.
Okay, that doesn't make sense, though.
Or no, it'd be $876.75 billion.
Yeah, okay. A crap ton of money. Over $800 billion. Adjusted, and the adjustment that it takes place is it's only it's adjusting ticket sales for the movie. So this film is set 3 years after Star Wars, The New Hope. The Galactic Empire, under the leadership of the villainous Darth Vader and the Emperor, is in pursuit of Luke Skywalker and the rest of the Rebel Alliance. While Vader relentlessly pursues the small band of Luke's friends, Han Solo, Princess Leia Organa, and others across the galaxy, Luke studies the Force under Jedi Master Yoda. When Vader captures Luke's friends, Luke must decide whether to complete his training and become a full Jedi Knight or to confront Vader and save them. A lot of the times I preface these statements by saying this is my opinion, but I think it's pretty much a solid fact that The Empire Strikes Back is the sequel of all sequels. I can't name a better one.
Yeah, I think it starts the trope of like, it's so good that it just ruins the opportunities for other sequels. Like, how good is that sequel? Is Empire Strikes Back good? Because usually they're not. Like, usually sequels aren't as good. And I think it's because it gets compared to how good of a sequel The Empire Strikes Back is compared to its original movie.
Yeah.
That's a fair assessment.
Yeah. I don't think anyone would argue with you that this is the better movie.
Yeah. So in this movie, you probably get my favorite romance of all time on screen because it's so earned and there's like a tit for tat going on and like all these little mini exchanges between Han and Leia. And at the end, you get one of the most known lines. I love you. I know. And it's just so good. It's awesome. And it made like I remember as a kid really idolizing Han Solo, which I realize that is probably not the type that you should idolize. But I think when it comes to like movie romances, I think Han and Leia really stands the test of time. And then you also end up with one of the largest battles in a movie up until this point, the Battle of Hoth. And that happens in the first act, which is pretty unheard of. Like, usually a battle the size of Hoth with the five walkers and something that expansive with that type of budget, you save that for your climactic scene. So when Empire Strikes Back is happening in this in its little time bubble of 1980, it's kind of like, well, whoa, how do you top this? This is a huge battle. And a lot of this... this happens because it has one of the best twists and most well-known twists in cinema history, and that is the "No, I am your father" scene, where Luke discovers that Darth Vader is his father.
Oh, but isn't it Luke, I am your father? No, that is wrong. That is not the line, people.
That, like, those two moments alone really set it up to blow A New Hope out of the water. Beyond this, you get to see the Force unfold not only in usage, but also in teaching. And all of this comes from Luke being trained on Dagobah with Yoda. And you get some of the best lines in Star Wars to this day. Like, even with the content that we have from the prequel trilogy, the sequel trilogy, and the anthology, a lot of Yoda's lines are some of my favorite. Like, when Luke says that he doesn't believe he can do it, and then Yoda responds, this is why you will fail. And then my favorite, which has helped me through a lot of hard times, like dealing with death, is the one, luminous beings we are, not this crude matter. And it's kind of, that line in particular is when Yoda is teaching Luke about the fact that everything goes back into the Force. It's all one thing, and you don't have to be afraid of it. Do you have any favorite, Adrian?
My favorite line is do or do not, there is no try. Like, I'm probably getting that tatted someday when I'm more
It's
ballsy.
Also probably the most, like, well-known, too. Like, I think everybody will say that or speak in the Yoda voice without ever seeing it, but I also have a hard time believing somebody hasn't seen Star Wars.
I think it's just so good, just because, like, it's how I try to, like, live my life. Like, either I'm gonna be able to do it or I'm not gonna be able to do it. Like, you can't just do it half-ass. You're either gonna fail or you're not gonna fail.
You whole ass one
and
thing.
And that failure, you know, and if you fail, failure is a good teacher, so it's okay.
Yeah. What about you, Matt? Do you have anything rememberable about the little green man?
No. I mean, basically, I was with Adrian in the favorite line of do or do not. There is no try, for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, and so, like, one of the cool things that you get here is you get the lifting of the X-Wing. You get Luke doing the one-handed handstand with Yoda on top of his feet.
Yeah.
Like, you just get so much in these scenes with Yoda. It's just really emotional, and it's the first time we really see the Force. And then you cannot talk about The Empire Strikes Back without Lando and this undercurrent of Empire Strikes Back tackling a really difficult issue of friendship and duty. Because a lot of people say Lando betrayed Han, but he was forced into it. It was Han or his entire city, and when that is your duty, you have to honor that. And in the end, Lando does try to save him. And he does turn around. Yeah. And he wasn't completely a betrayer. I don't know how you guys feel. I love Lando.
I'm a Lando sympathizer. for sure.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. Darth Vader shows up to your door. He's like, hey, do this or I'm going to subjugate your entire planet. Like, what are you supposed to do?
Yes.
Like, really? Come on.
Well, what made you actually think he was not? He already blew up one planet. I just don't see what was the point of actually thinking he wasn't just going to betray you in the end anyways.
Well, yeah, that is true. But then he would, like, but then at least Lando can stay alive to even attempt to save Han. Because what happens? He's dead. Han shows up to Vader anyway, and Han's dead either way.
Only because it worked out.
Well, yeah, because it's writing.
And I mean, you're like, well, yeah, but I mean, it's kind of like when people take you hostage or whatever, and they say if you see your face, you're going to die. There's no point telling information because they're going to kill you anyways.
Yeah. Well, in the end, like, Han does still end up frozen in carbonite.
True.
But it does lead to the rescue in the next movie. But before we move on to Return of the Jedi, is there anything else you all want to talk about here for Empire?
No, I really like Empire because harkening it back to like a Clerks reference of like when they ask, you know, which one you like better, and his like explanation of like it just ends on like such a down note. Like that's what life is. It's a series of down endings. Like this movie did not have a happy ending.
Nope.
At all. And basically every other movie in this franchise has like a hope, you know, ending or something like that. Like this one does not. And I think that's why it sets it apart for me. And it has, now that like you're reading back through these, I'm like, man, this movie had so many twists. I can't imagine like being, you know, a kid or even like an adult in like 1980 watching this movie and just being faked out with like Yoda actually being like the Jedi Master because he plays Luke so well.
Yes.
Trolls him so hard, you know. The Lando thing. I can't imagine watching this not just being blown away by it back then.
I have altered the deal. Pray I do not alter it further.
Yeah.
What about you, Matt?
I'm all about it.
I like the Dagobah stuff. I thought that was cool and interesting.
Yeah, because I think like those training scenes can be really bad. Like the hero training montage, I think like if I think about some of the stuff we get now, a lot of the times it's really rushed. And it's just kind of like, you don't have any oomph to it. But I think when I go back and I watch Empire Strikes Back, like, nothing that Yoda did in those scenes with Luke was not purposeful. Like, all of it had a reason behind it. And you really get to see that part of Luke's journey. I also think this is, like, the perfect thing to be sandwiched between two hopeful movies. Like, just in general, like, this is the perfect sandwich. Because you have the medal ceremony in A New Hope and the Teddy Bear Picnic in Return of the Jedi. And this is just everything sucks.
This also allows you to have probably the best parody song ever.
Which is?
Seagulls.
Oh, yes! That's going to be your outro music.
Okay.
Oh, Seagulls is so good. The bad lip reading of the Dagobah scene. It's so good. It makes me so happy. Okay. Moving on. So then we move on to Return of the Jedi, which came out in 1983, and it was directed by Richard Marquand and written by George Lucas and Lawrence Kasdan. And this is the 16th most successful for domestic gross, adjusted for inflation, of course, at $839,950,500. Is that correct?
$839,950,500.
Yeah. In this one, the Galactic Empire, under the direction of the ruthless Emperor, is constructing a second Death Star in order to crush the Rebel Alliance once and for all. Since the Emperor plans to personally oversee the final stages of its construction, the Rebel fleet launches a full-scale attack on the Death Star in order to prevent its completion and kill the Emperor, effectively bringing an end to the Empire's hold over the galaxy. Meanwhile, Luke Skywalker, a Jedi apprentice, struggles to bring his father, Darth Vader, back to the light side of the Force. So this probably ends with one of the most hopeful things in the fact that Vader does come to the light side and that it leaves hope that people can be redeemed. Beyond that, you also get the Force ghosts of Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda, and Anakin Skywalker. Hayden Ghost or not.
Hayden Ghost is the one that makes sense. It'll always just make sense. Like, I don't know. That's a topic for another time. But
no, I'm all right with Hayden Ghost. I actually think it makes sense now after I had somebody explain to me that was his Jedi death. And so that's what he stays in.
Yeah.
So I'm totally fine with hating ghosts now. But what I really like about the Force ghosts and using them here is it points out that it adds to the mythology around the Force, and it really solidifies it as this force that literally binds life and death together, and nothing is separate from it, which means once you leave, you are still there, which I think sets up beautifully for all of the extended, not necessarily extended universe, just the books, but in the television series where you have a lot of communication there, and the prequels, as well as the, you know, hopefully in the sequel, and in the sequel trilogy and everything like that. It really lets you understand how the Force moves between people. So then there's Ewok debacle. I am a fan of Ewoks, so I'm just going to say that first. But Ewoks are not actually named in the movie. They are, in fact, named to sell a toy. And they're named afterwards. And it is probably one of the most contested parts of this entire trilogy.
So one, I find out it's interesting that the Ewoks are named afterwards for toys. And nowadays, I can find out a porg, what a porg is for a movie that hasn't been released in 6 months. For another 6 months.
Accurate.
Yeah. Accurate.
Accurate. I am not a fan of the Ewoks at all. Like, so, just in general, like, Return of the Jedi has, like, such a good, like, premise, and thematically it's great, but they just do just, like, silly things, and one of the biggest silly things that they did was do Ewoks to sell toys, basically. Like, they should have just stayed with the Wookiee idea. I don't care if it's too expensive and, you know, seeing... Like, you're gonna tell me if they went to Kashyyyk and Chewbacca reunites with his homies and they rip the arms off of stormtroopers, that's not better than watching some Ewoks, you know, cuddle stormtroopers to death?
I love Ewoks, but that is kind of better.
My biggest problem with it is that it sets off, like, people give a lot of the prequels a lot of, you know, slack for being kid friendly, but it starts here. Like, the whole tone of this movie, there's, like, a lot more jokes in this. Like, it's not the same as Empire. And I don't know if that's, like, a falling with, like, Empire just being so much better. Or if it's, like, they're a concerted effort just to go more kid-friendly so you can sell more toys. But I think it's a big step back, for, like, for this trilogy. And it's not the bookend that I would have liked, I think, if I was a kid back then. Or, like, if I was, like, an adult watching this back then. I don't think I would have been as happy with it.
I mean, like, I totally see, when I think about the complaints about the Phantom Menace for people, and, like, for people that still hold it really close, like, I remember wearing out my Return of the Jedi VHS, but I was also a kid, and I also really loved Ewoks. So now, like, when I think back, like, out of my prequel-hating mind and into my, like, just looking at stuff mind, like, I totally understand that same critique is lodged against Return of the Jedi, and it has to be. But Ewoks are still cuddly, and my dog has a costume to be one, and they make me really happy, and I love them.
I think the whole thing just cheapens the Empire. Like, when the Spanish came over and hung out with our ancestors, Kate, did our ancestors do too well there?
No.
No, they didn't. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
And but our ancestors didn't have Han and Leia.
I guess. I mean, the Pathfinders are cool.
Exactly.
Han Solo's team is cool. That part I just didn't really like. And then in the extended edition, like, they got rid of the only cool thing that they really had was, like, the end. Their end song is so good, and then they get rid of it in the special editions. It's so dumb.
Which, I wonder if we can find that end song on YouTube to play while you're talking about that. Because that would be great. Ba-bum, ba-bum,
ba-bum, ba-bum. It's so good. I like that, too, because it shows them actually being savage. Like, they're playing on Stormtrooper helmets. Like, did they eat them?
They did,
like,
they because ate they were about right? to eat the other people like, who show up.
That's cool. But then they kid-friendly did even more, even to get rid of the savagery of the Ewoks to make it more kid-friendly. To tie it more into the prequels. It's just not cool. Like I said, it is cool thematically. Like, the whole Luke and Vader and Emperor dynamic is great. Like, I love all of that. That last scene of, like, Luke, like, is Luke going to go bad? Is he going to do it? I think is great. But yeah, then they ruin it with Ewoks.
Yeah, which I think,
this is why I put Revenge of the Sith over this movie. Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I guess from here we can just go, like, straight into the but why those, because I think a lot of the, when we talk about a lot of the but why those for character development and costuming and stuff like that, we can't isolate it to one part of the trilogy, because when George Lucas was mapping this out, he mapped it out as a plan to take part across all three. And the reason he did this is because his entire goal was to create an American mythology. He wasn't trying to just make a series. He wasn't trying to just make a movie. He wasn't trying to just do sci-fi. He was trying very hard to replicate the mythology of the Greeks and the Romans and all of, you know, from everywhere across. And so what he did was he based Star Wars, all three movies, very heavily on Joseph Campbell's work in 1949 with the book The Hero of a Thousand, with a Thousand Faces. And the reason that this, for me, and this is probably the one thing that I'm going to talk a lot about, or not a lot, I don't know. This is the one thing that I'm really passionate about, because when I was doing my undergraduate work in religious studies, this is what really made me see that I wanted to study pop culture at a graduate level, because of how George Lucas's success with creating this into a mythology has made Star Wars this this force that permeates into almost all aspects of your life, even if you don't want it to. Even if you want to close yourself off to Star Wars, you can't escape the references, you can't escape the marketing. I don't know how much that goes into mythology, but you know these characters and you know who they are with a visual, you know who they are just by saying it. So The Hero with a Thousand Faces is a book that builds on the pioneering work of an anthropologist named Adolf Bastian. And this guy was the one who first produced the proposed the idea that myths were built on these things called elementary ideas. And what this sets up is the type of discussion that we have about tropes in our fandoms now, both in scholarship and from the fan perspective. So the final girl, fridging, any of the things that we talk about that are tropey, that is something that we've produced within our own media production, which is what people like Joseph Campbell and Bastian were trying to isolate. And so in The Hero of a Thousand Faces, Joseph Campbell isolates all the parts to making an odyssey, all the parts to making an epic. So what happens here is you end up with, one is the departure, two is the initiation, and three is the return. Which obviously you can kind of see stuff here. So in the first one, and this sets up the entire pretty much plot of A New Hope, you have the call to adventure, which is Leia's message, the refusal of the call because he has to go help with the harvest, supernatural aid is because Obi-Wan rescues Luke from the Sand People, and crossing the first threshold is escaping Tatooine, and the belly of the whale is signified with the trash compactor and Han and him fighting their way, them finding their way out. In episode 2, you have the initiation, and it's broken down like this. You have the Road of Trials, which is lightsaber practice, the meeting with the goddess, which is Princess Leia. And in this is when you really have an emphasis on her costuming, because she wears white. And this, her being Luke Skywalker's sister is important because it replicates being a sister within the order of like one of those mythological goddesses. You have the temptation, which goes in the way of the path, which is Luke being tempted to the dark side. You have the atonement with the father, where Darth and Luke reconciling or becoming aware of each other. You have the apotheosis, which is becoming godlike, which is a moment in which Luke becomes a Jedi. And then you have the ultimate boon. And so this is the moment that really shifts the story in the hero's favor. And it sets up the third act. And this is when the Death Star is destroyed. In Return, you have the refusal of the return. And this happens when they're asking Luke to leave and Luke just wants to stay. He wants to avenge Obi. You have the magic flight, which is symbolized by the Millennium Falcon, rescue from without, and Han saves Luke from Darth, crossing the return threshold, the Millennium Falcon destroying pursuing TIE fighters, Master of Two Worlds, victory ceremony, freedom to live, rebellion, and the victorious over the Empire. And then you just have the common tropes, which is probably the easiest thing for people to kind of understand. You have two worlds, so you have the Death Star existing as this world of the Empire, and then you have everything else. And this is what takes place on Tatooine, this is what takes place at the Battle of Endor, anything that's situated away, and in Hoth as well. You have the mentor, the wise mentor, who's Obi-Wan, the oracle, who is Yoda. The prophecy is that Luke will overthrow the Empire. Pegs is the fair hero. The web-wearing enemy's skin is Luke and Han in their stormtrooper outfits. The shapeshifter is Han Solo, because Han goes through this process of being the scoundrel to actually becoming a hero over this entire journey. And then the animal familiars are R2-D2 and Chewbacca, of course. And then, yeah, I mean, that pretty much just maps. That is the entirety of archetypes for almost every mythological story and almost every epic. And what George Lucas did was he mapped his works to fit this, because they are still being redone today. Like, those epics, the Odyssey, or even if you look at Shakespeare's works, all of these things are still being, I guess, rebooted, I guess? I don't know how to, like, explain it.
Yeah, I mean, it lasts for a reason, right? Like, it's a perfect template for telling a saga-like Odyssey. And while you're going through this, I'm just remembering watching when the History Channel used to show things that weren't Pawn Stars. I don't know if you guys remember watching, or if either of you've watched, like, the Star Wars Legacy Revealed thing, like, I think it was, like, 2006, 2007, something like that. And everything you're saying is, like, what I got out of that. And, like, as a kid, I, as a kid learning about the Odyssey, like, at the same time as I was watching that, I was like, oh, my God, this is why Star Wars is so good. Because it hits on everything that makes the epics that have lasted for thousands of years so good. So I think you just covered it great. Good job, Kate.
Yeah.
Good job, scholar.
I'm happy. It's hard because it's a lot of information. And what I want you to take away when you're listening for it, like, there's a reason. It wasn't a fluke. Like, George Lucas knew what he was doing from the very beginning. And this is something that he tried to replicate in the prequels. And now he's trying, now, like, overall, you're hoping that this mythos extends outside the original trilogy to the prequel trilogy and the sequel trilogy, and hopes that it all has that same lasting power.
Yeah.
So all of this pretty much gives us a measuring stick for which to look at all of science fiction, but it also gives us a very real and familiar way to analyze these archetypes. So when I was teaching students about the use of archetypes in, like, religious texts and stuff, well, what I did was I talked about Star Wars, because that, like, everybody knows that. And if you don't do it with Star Wars, you can also easily map Lord of the Rings onto this as well. But for George, having this be a purely visual film at first and make it purely American, that was really important. So from this mythology, like most mythologies, you actually end up with a lot of influences from different religions, specifically Buddhism, directly affecting the Jedi path and the Jedi way. And the establishment of the dark side is very, very representative of the way in which dualistic religions work. So you have the light and the dark, specifically like Zoroastrian religions, that deal with these dueling forces at all times. So when the dark rises, the light rises. And this is something that has been one of the core tenets of Star Wars. You can't have the dark without the light. And then from this, it inspires a legit religion. Like, all of this mythology is a big but why, though, because yes, it's here. And it still stays, But two, it has inspired people to craft their own state-recognized religions in the northern UK and New Zealand. So it's easy to say that it's like this Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster type thing where they just like do it to do it. But when you actually look at what a lot of these people put forward, and it's really fascinating, and this is the main reason I chose to write, like, did my undergraduate thesis studies on this, is when you read the books of, you can go on Amazon and look up books on Jediism. They're written by a lot of like Catholic theologians, and they're reconciling the use of the Jedi path within their own religion. So how can you take the Jedi path and use it as a way to attach to what you're already doing? And then in the cases removed from that, you actually have people who don't have an established religion, but just use the Jedi way to look at life. It's really interesting, and it kind of blew me away when I found out about it. But a lot of the work when it comes to Star Wars and religion is really done from like the Catholic theologian perspective, which I found really interesting.
You didn't think they just stole stuff like they do with a lot of their religion?
What?
Hmm?
What?
I said you're surprised that the Catholics stole stuff like they did with a lot of their religion?
Well, I mean, all religions kind of stole stuff. But
pretty sure the Catholic one stole quite a bit.
Well, it's not so much that Catholics stole it, it's so much that Catholics invaded everywhere, and the people who were there still wanted to practice their own religions and then morphed it into like the Catholic stuff. So like it wasn't really Catholic sin so much as like, how do I survive when the Catholics are killing me? Oh, I just rise up to meet it.
They don't just become Jedi?
No, they don't just become Jedi.
I don't know how much you looked into it, Kate, but how deep do these dudes follow this? Like, are they no attachment, you know?
So,
are people like secretly getting girls pregnant and not telling anybody about it?
So like, when you kind of have two sides to every coin. So when you look at the stuff that I looked at, mostly because of how my research study like was set up, I was looking at the people who produced text and then used to map it onto their own religion. But for that, it works with people like priests or ascetics, so Buddhists and stuff like that, who already have that way of detachment from it. It's easy to map on. And obviously that is what, like, those tenets of like, of purity and resistance and not attaching to the world is something that Lucas pulled heavily from ascetic religions. But when it comes to people who practice like under the name like Jediism, like in like the northern UK and New Zealand, if they don't do that, a lot of the times they just take it to be like a good person. Like I wasn't able to really find anybody like living in a tree in a swamp with no wife. Like I wasn't able to find any of that, surprisingly. So
cool, just checking.
But it is really interesting to look into. And if you are a practitioner, if you are a practitioner of the Jedi faith, reach out to me. Let me interview. Let me pick your mind. Yeah, I actually have like 3 books on my shelf about Jediism right now. So one of the big things after this is you have Lucas's attention to costuming. So one of the things that Lucas did was he wanted to make sure that the costumes with his characters grew. And the most important way that you see this is actually with Luke, because in A New Hope, he starts off as wearing all white. In Empire, he's wearing all gray. And in Return, he's wearing black. But at the end of Return, he has that flap of white show. And that's to show that Luke was tempted but turned away. And that white, that hope and that light still revealed itself even in the dark times and even through his anger. So like that type. And Matt actually got me a costume book for Christmas. And this is my birthday one year. Was it my birthday?
Yes.
Yeah, for my birthday one year. And so it's a coffee table book, and it has like these awesome detailed drawings of the original trilogy, like just breaking down all the costumes. And the really cool thing that I liked about costuming, specifically with Leia, which brings me into my next book, Why, that ties it to costuming, but there aren't a crap ton of female characters, and this is like a knock for Star Wars, is that there isn't a lot. Like, you have Lando and you have Leia, and they're about the only diverse characters of the universe for the most part.
Hey, Mon Mothma's there for a scene. to give the Bothan line, and that's it.
At least we had aliens.
We did have aliens.
Now we don't even have aliens.
Anyway, so one of the things that Leia did when she was introduced was her iconic look with the buns and the solid white dress. That was chosen specifically by George to kind of throw everybody off, because she was supposed to look... One, she was supposed to resemble, like this sisterly, like, priestess-type person. But on the other side of that, she was also supposed to be shown in pure white, because you're supposed to assume, oh, she's a princess. She does not get dirty. Like, she's not going to do the heavy lifting. She's not going to do the work, and she's going to be the damsel. And what Lucas does is he flips that on you, and you see Leia pretty much being the brains of the operation once Luke and Han have her. And you see that by the dress becoming increasingly dirty throughout that movie.
Yeah. How iconic are those buns, even though, like, it only happens in, like, one movie?
Yeah.
Like, if you go anywhere... super iconic. You go anywhere, you know, what are the ladies wearing? Either Leia buns, or I guess now they're doing, like, the Rey...
Yeah.
The Rey hairdo.
The like, three that's, buns.
Yeah, the three bun. Like, that's a lasting... That's lasting comic. That's lasting costuming right there.
Yep. And I think too, like, one of the things that's really interesting is as she moves through the series, she still has white. She's still wearing white in Hoth, but it's very practical. Like her costuming is always practical because Leia isn't just meant to be the princess. She's meant to be a leader, and that was something that is solidified past the original trilogy as well. And probably one of my favorite shots is when she's standing in the middle of all of the pilots before they go out, and you can see everybody looking at her, and it's really powerful. And you just see how important Leia was supposed to be. Beyond that, you go into the metal bikini, which has a lot of really creepy things around it because Carrie Fisher did not want to wear it, and George Lucas did not want her to wear underwear under it. And so she personally hated that outfit. And I know that a lot of people don't find Slave Leia empowering because right before this, you get her as Boosh, where she's infiltrating Jabba's palace in Return of the Jedi to save Han. But what I think a lot of people over... And obviously, if you have issues for it, I'm not invalidating it, but the fact that Leia turns into a hut slayer by strangling Jabba with her own chain is probably one of my favorite moments that Leia has in the entire three movies, because like it's just so gratifying. If you look in the book, Lucas wanted it to highlight the fact that she's changed from this person who's in control to this person who isn't. And so when she has that moment, it's her reasserting her power, and after that you have her in the practical gear again. So I think that as creepy as the interaction with Carrie and George is, I still find that scene's really powerful.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I like it. Slave Leia, Hut Slayer Leia, whatever you want to call it, like, she still chokes out a hut at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's all that, in my opinion, that's all that should really matter.
Yeah, that is all
and,
that
like,
matters.
And rewatching it, like, you could tell that they had a plan, like, they kind of anticipated, like, this might happen.
Yeah.
You know, they were all in on it. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Also, for costuming, you end up with probably the most overhyped, well, one of the most overhyped characters who is known for his armor and his costuming, but not much else, really. Because he doesn't do a lot, but get thrown into the Sarlacc. That is Boba Fett.
But don't worry, he was taken down by most overhyped character.
Yeah, poor guy.
Yep.
It's all right, though. I think that death, though, sets off so much stuff in the expanded universe. People are, like, so upset. They're like, nope, we're going to write our own stories, George Lucas. You shut your mouth. So... Yeah, I don't know if you guys have ever seen like the robot chicken ones, like where they have him coming out of the Sarlacc pit.
Yes.
Or any of the robot chicken stuff that involves Boba Fett is just great. It's so good.
Yeah. And I think it's just
And it all like, centers around like him kind of going out like a punk, which is
Yeah.
So I like it.
My favorite thing is there's a song called Boba the Fett or something like that, and it's by MC Chris. Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah, Fett's Vet by MC Chris. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, and it's amazing how much, like, in this many years, everybody loves frickin' Boba Fett, even though he was there for nothing, and he's, like, stood the test of time, which is really weird, because you also end up with groups like the Mandalorian Mercs, who were solely basing their stuff on, like, the extended universe, and him up until you get more of Mandalore in the animations.
Yeah, because say what you will, the fans, you know, theories do matter, because, you know, like, this wouldn't be what it is without the fans. Yes. So, and this is just my subtle way of saying, stop talking shit to fans who have fan theories, and, like, because some of them are valid. Like, that's, people put time into that kind of stuff.
And then one of the last things that I have to say really about this is the fact that it is a freaking marketing juggernaut. Jaws and Star Wars A New Hope pretty much solidify the blockbuster. They make this a thing that studios decide to repeat, and that's how you end up with a summer block of movies, where it's just movies that were ridiculously expensive and were made to fill seats. So the success of the Star Wars films led to the franchise to become one of the most merchandised franchises in the world. And in 1977, while filming the original film, George Lucas decided to take a $500,000 pay cut from his own salary as director in exchange for fully owning the merchandising rights of the franchise to himself. Over the franchise's lifetime, such exchange cost 20th Century Fox more than $20 billion in franchising revenue profits. Disney acquired the merchandising rights when they purchased Lucasfilm. So now all the money's going to Disney.
That's crazy, right? Like, because when we did our Pokemon episode, one of, like, the biggest things for Pokemon that is, like, it is the biggest media franchise ever, with Star Wars being second.
Yeah.
And, like, I imagine if Lucas didn't do that, and that money went to, like, actual profits to companies, how much bigger Star Wars would be now.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Which I think, too, like, that the fact that, like, 20th Century Fox also, prior to the Disney mergers, owned the rights to the theatrical cut of the movie, which is why we never got, why we only get post 93 special editions, because Fox wasn't letting them out of that vault. So,
I mean, it could happen now, though, right?
Yeah, no, isn't it, like, a big thing about them owning?
I will spend a ridiculous amount of money. I will mark out for it. I am that target demographic.
And that is why they overpaid.
Yeah, I will overpay for that shit. I will. I saw it on Laserdisc, like, a few years ago. I'm like, man, this movie's so much different without Dubax chilling in the background for no reason. Come on, Disney, do the right thing.
Which I honestly think that's why they negotiated that deal the way they did, and why they were so aggressive with it to box out everybody, because they had all the money they could make from that, and they had the rights to the X-Men.
Yeah, it's a good and a bad thing.
It's a very, like, bad thing. 5,000
Because now we're getting Star Wars movies every year.
Yeah.
And we're in danger of becoming, like, comic book and movie franchise level of just the amount of movies are coming out, and fan base is not wanting to admit faults or not being able to deal with faults. It's thanks, original trilogy. It's all your fault for being so damn good.
I was personally thinking about the 5,000 people that Disney just let go from their jobs after the merger, but yeah, that too.
Oh, yeah. That too.
That's pretty much all I had. I mean, the other main thing is that the original trilogy opens the door for so much of everybody's childhood. And if you think about it, like, this was our parents' childhood. The Phantom Menace, if you go by years, was, or, you know, the prequel trilogy was ours. And now there's a whole generation of kids after us who have the sequel trilogy. Like, there is not somebody who is growing up without Star Wars, or at least a Star Wars that they can identify with. And I think that's also one of the big but why those for the original trilogy is because Lucas mapped everything onto all of these archetypes. There is somebody for somebody to identify with somewhere.
I totally agree. Like, I think it's one of my problems with all the criticisms for The Last Jedi, and of course we're not gonna talk about any spoilers or anything in this, but, like, people have the right to be upset if the Star Wars movie they're getting isn't Star Wars. You know what I mean? Like, especially if you grew up with this since 1977 and then give you a movie of a franchise that you've grown up with your entire life and it's not what it used to be or like not what it is. Like, that's kind of, that's tough to deal with.
Yeah.
Especially because this is the trilogy that people hold to such a high standard because of what happens with the prequels.
Yeah.
And just for my own, just for my own sake, I think you've covered everything super well in this episode. A lot of the stuff that you talked about, it was supposed to be in the prequels. Like, all these archetype stuff was supposed to be in there, but you can just tell that, like, the execution here, we're able to talk about all of these, all of, like, the mythos and everything like that in this, but we can't talk about that in the prequels because of all of, like, the missteps. So exactly. This just goes to show the execution of the original trilogy compared to the prequels and why we're able to have this conversation, not just talk about all the bad stuff and good stuff like we did for the prequel episode.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I feel bad for not really mentioning bad stuff, except New Hope is kind of boring. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot of bad, to be honest, other than, like, the New Hope being slow. I wouldn't say boring. I think it's super slow.
Okay.
Super slow, and then the whole Ewok thing is just kind of jacked up. And then, I guess, like, you can make the argument that there probably need to be more than two women in the whole universe, and then that there need to be more than one black guy. And yeah. Then there were no brown people.
Yeah. I mean, and it's weird, too, because, and I think this is really just me putting on my blinders, because it's something that I love. Like, I don't remember feeling that growing up. Like, I remember being told, like, the women thing, yes, because I remember trying to play a Jedi, like, on, like, the, like, on the playground, and being told I couldn't be a Jedi because I was a girl. That happened a crap ton, and I still hit them with a stick. But at the end of the day, like, I was able to see myself in those characters, and I think it has to do with how well it was done in making you feel for them, like, in, like, the ins and outs. Like, and I think that's why, as much, because I think we've had this conversation before, where you're like, no, the prequels are your childhood, Kate. And I'm like, no, like, my obsession with this here, like, in this moment, in this writing, like, I do remember as a kid not having the same feelings as I did, like, watching Return of the Jedi on repeat or watching Empire and, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Like, I didn't get those same feelings either watching this either. I think a lot of the reasons because before I saw the prequels and things like that, I was reading the Expanded Universe books, so I was getting all of, like, the diversity, all the alien stuff, all of that stuff that I needed in the Expanded Universe books, kind of like how I do now. So, same feelings, just different way of getting it. So,
yeah. Also, too, like, don't take that as me, like, not saying that, like, representation doesn't matter, because obviously I'm a part of the people who have been working for the hashtag, because we all really care about everybody being able to see a part of themselves in this universe. But yeah, I just think that it's just so well written. Like, the original trilogy is so well written. Like, I can't fault it for almost anything, which is probably bad. So if you have problems with it, like, Matt, like, do you have any, like, glaring issues or, like, bad for the original Star Wars trilogy?
This is about to start when we get pew-pew in space and physics goes out the window.
Ooh, yeah.
And then, unfortunately, because it's so long and people hold it so thing, it kind of keeps falling throughout all the prequels and even into the new movies.
So we're never going to get, like, a physics-based Star Wars movie.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough, man. Like, no one wants to watch these battles in silence. I mean, maybe you do, but I don't. I need some goddamn explosions and some pew-pew.
Off the thing, it's funny that basically both of you basically said the best part of the new movie is the silent part.
Are you right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I can't even argue. I can't even argue that. Yeah.
I don't even think...
You're right, Matt. I can see that point, brother.
Yeah. Like, we can leave it in there, because, like, I don't think that's a spoiler. God damn it, Matt.
God damn it, Matt. I can't even argue that. That's one scene, though. That's one scene compared to, like, but the Millennium Falcon getting chased by a Star Destroyer.
Adrian,
like,
though, it is probably...
Watching that and...
It is probably one of the best scenes out of the entire franchise.
Yeah, but it's not a battle. It's one scene. Battle of Yavin in silence with, or Battle of Endor in silence with it. Like with one, it's a trap, and then like the rest of it is just silence. I don't know how well that.
Who
that
says
plays.
It's a trap?
We're not talking about it. How the science doesn't play out, but who cares? Because it's in a galaxy far, far away, and we don't know if quantum physics. That's all I'm going to say. It's quantum physics, and we don't know.
When in doubt, quantum physics.
Well, like I said, it's just basically exactly. This whole thing sets up for this, where it basically now it's basically allowed this to happen.
Yeah.
To where even that. Like right. This new movie, you get pew pew, and nobody's going to blink an eye.
What
but
do
you,
we get?
Pew pew. But, like, if you look at, like, Gravity and stuff, like the movie Gravity, or even, what the hell was the one with Matthew McConaughey in it?
Interstellar. Oh, even 2001 A Space Odyssey. Like, that movie gets all of its stuff from its silence.
Yeah, but, I mean, like I said, they do a lot. They try to do science, like, they do the actual physics, and then people either rag on them that something's not right or something's not wrong. But yeah. Star Wars, we don't care.
People, you mean Neil deGrasse Tyson?
What
galaxy?
No, there's a lot of
what galaxy though, are those movies in?
Doesn't matter. I don't know what
galaxy. Well, technically, Interstellar is in a different galaxy, isn't it?
Yeah, and then time works different on that one planet because they're somewhere different.
Is it time dilation?
Yeah, there's time dilation in Star Wars. Force-rich planets have time dilation. That's a fact. That's canon. I bypassed the compressor.
Okay.
No, you're right, man. I can't discredit you.
So
good
to
point.
Wrap up,
you win.
I don't know how much of that I'll keep and how much I'll cut out. But
keep all of it.
So to wrap up, I do want to include some fan but why those. They are pretty. These are probably the most lengthy fan but why those we've ever gotten because these people really love Star Wars and they love the original trilogy. So. All of these do come from Twitter, so I'm going to go ahead and give you their Twitter handles. First, from @IceKnowNothing, host of Podcast 2187, the original trilogy...
Wait, before you go on, can I just say that's a great Twitter name?
Yeah.
IceKnowNothing? That's really good. That's Game of Thrones reference, right? Like, I'm not tripping? Like, that's a Game of Thrones reference? I love that. That's so good.
Go follow him.
So, is their podcast supposed to be from 2187, or is it something else?
It's a Star Wars podcast.
Are they 2187?
Yeah, 2187.
Why can't they be from 2187?
Yeah, it's a reference to Finn.
Yeah, FN 2187.
So from Podcast 2187, the original trilogy was still going on when I was born. The first movie I was conscious for was Return of the Jedi, though I have no recollection of it. My brothers and I were born a little before each other. My brothers and I were born a little before each of the original trilogy films. Star Wars was the first movie my oldest brother saw, Empire the first my middle brother saw, and it was the first thing we all loved. It introduced us to collecting, to fandom, to mythology, fantasy, and sci-fi. Though there are other fandoms I hold alongside Star Wars, the films and characters in the original trilogy are the first that captured my imagination completely and bonded my entire family. The lessons of Luke Skywalker, that we aren't our parents, that love can overcome hate, and that the nonviolent path can still change the world are lessons that shaped who I am as a person. The example of Leia, of duty, service, sacrifice, and honor, of using position of privilege and power to help those being exploited and used. The Skywalker siblings gave me the most influential and long-lasting ideas of what heroism is to me. Basically, I love everything about the original trilogy, and the experience of growing up around it and during it feels inseparable from the things that made me who I am today. I told you these were going to be good.
Yeah, that's, like, really good.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish we would have had someone who was, like, a kid at that time, you know? Like, it coming from us, I think it's a little bit different. And it doesn't discredit... I don't think it discredits, like, our fucking love for the franchise, because if you look at my office is full... I literally had a Star Wars wedding, like, 3 months ago. But I think I would just love to have to talk to someone, you know, outside of like my uncles and stuff who grew up with this.
I know you had a Star Wars wedding, but what was that based upon though?
What do you mean?
What was the theme?
Star Wars?
What was it called?
The Phantom Marriage? I have a plan. I'm George Lucas, bro. I got a plan. Every major event in my life is going to be named after a Star Wars movie. It's all planned out.
but you didn't take original trilogy.
If you were really George Lucas, you would have started at 4 and then worked your way back.
Yeah, but that's confusing to explain to people. All of my grooms were dressed as stormtroopers from either the original trilogy or like the sequel trilogy.
I did like your selection of stormtroopers, by the way.
I had the 501st come. I didn't have the prequel 501st come. Like, don't you discredit my wedding, Matthew.
Not Anakin's, like,
I'm going to come to Austin and force choke you because I find your lack of faith disturbing.
I'm finished going through family why those, and then we do our personal stuff or whatever. So, next is from @SpaceJess with 4 S's. Return of the Jedi was the first adult, in quotes, movie I sat and watched with my dad when I was 3. There's nothing like these movies. They're mystical yet filled with futuristic tech, but they feel used and lived in. They feel like you can step into them and be a part of the universe. The original trilogy introduced good characters I love and evil ones I'm fascinated by. For over 20 years, I've talked about these movies with friends, and I never get tired of it. Leia was the first badass woman I saw on screen, and I think was a huge influence of what kind of woman I see as mentors to this day. Women that that don't take shit, who get shit done, and love deeply without losing themselves. I completely agree with you there, Jess.
The only funny thing about a futuristic tech, because I see all these buildings, and all I see is, like, giant, huge corridors and, like, giant stuff.
That's the future. Big corridors and a whole bunch of holes. Next, you have from @WolfsGhost with an E. When it comes to Star Wars, the original trilogy is my home. It was the Star Wars that I first recall that my dad excitedly set up on our oversized VCR to record its initial network broadcast premiere, complete with Mark Hamill hosting the telecast that shared behind-the-scenes footage with the original film, and that, as I grew older, came to dominate my interest and my time. My bedroom walls became adorned with posters for each of the 3 films. Open space on my bookshelves disappeared as the continued adventures of my heroes Han, Luke, and Leia in the fledgling expanded universe produced one book after another, and the free time after school disappeared in long hours of missions in the primitive graphics of 90s-era X-Wing flight sim. The original trilogy became my expertise, and though I still spent time with the friends I had grown up with, it was the friends whom I made on the internet, from bulletin boards to chat rooms, that I found I could speak the beloved language of the Force and all things in the galaxy far, far away with. It was these conversations that eventually resulted in introducing me to the woman who would later become my wife. Aww. My deepest, longest attachments to Star Wars drew from the original trilogy because it is the foundation of my fandom today. Even in the part of my life where events drew my time and resources away from the franchise, it remained within me, planted from countless hours spent watching the same 3 films over and over again. As to why or how these films came to mean so much to me, why I watched them excessively, it was Luke Skywalker's call to adventure, the transition from a nobody who dreamt of a future that was diminished by the reality of his fate. It was the romance of Han and Leia, the I know in a carbonite freezing chamber, and the spiritual teachings of a green pint-sized Jedi master. The excited starfighter dogfights and the stirring music of John Williams that came to score my life as much as the films. I fell in love with the characters and the mysticism of the Force, the snub nose of the T-65 X-Wing, and the quiet contemplation of Darth Vader as he turned his gaze from his son to the Emperor and back again before finding the goodness that Luke sensed in him. On every level, the stories, the characters, the settings, and music, I came to love the original trilogy.
Where were you people when we asked for fan but why those of Fast and the Furious? That's all I want to know.
So everybody asked to DM me because, like, as you can tell from their responses, like, the original trilogy means a lot to them. And so they didn't feel like they could just put it all, like, they wanted to be able to express their thoughts fully. Which I really appreciate, and I do the same thing, which is probably why my stuff doesn't get read on podcasts when I send them in.
Yeah, no, that was super, super good.
Yeah. Like, and that's the thing. I didn't want to shorten any of these down because they're all really, really well written. And they're all, like, really passionate. And that's important because I think that gets at what a But Why Though is and why this still matters to people. So the next and last is from at ShannonJoy26. The original trilogy matters for so many reasons. It was what got me into this fandom and has brought me so much happiness and good friends. But for me, it is a story of Luke that I think I will always go back to. He's an optimistic person who cares maybe too much and can't give a quippy line and let things roll off his back like I am. The fact that he gets to be the hero and wins because of how he cares is incredible. In the last few years, I've also realized that part of why I always identified with me with his relationship with his dad. I had a very combative relationship with my dad for a long time due to mental illness, and I basically refused to cut him out of my life when it might have been an easier path for me. I was able to make peace with him before he died about 4 years ago, and ever since, I realized that seeing Luke do the same thing had meant more than my brain even knew for a long time. That is really powerful. And I think what everybody said, just in general, like, these movies mean a lot because when you watch them as a kid and they get... It's the same reason you have Aesop's Fable books that are still printed today teaching you, like, tales, like, what not to do. The same reason fairy tales still exist to teach you morals. The same reason mythology and epics were... Greek mythology and epics were around. It was to teach you something and for you to carry that with you when you came into adulthood. And I think these fan But Why Those... And I know personally for me, like, when I graduated college for undergrad, I decorated my hat, and the only thing I wanted to put on there was Never Tell Me the Odds. Because for me, that, coming from my family, summed up my entire experience. Because it was hard to graduate, and it was hard to work through college. All those things. And so, like, that, like, I turned to Star Wars a whole bunch. So it was really great to get those Fan But Why Those, and thank you for sharing them with us. It means a lot for you to open up to us like that and to really show everybody why it matters.
Yeah. I don't have anything to add. Yeah. Sorry.
On that note, last thoughts?
Last thoughts to follow up those amazing But Why Fan But Why Those. I will say that the original trilogy kicked off my favorite fandom of all time. It kicked off my love of collecting things that spawned off of the original trilogy, you know, i.e. the books, the Star Wars Galaxies video game, things like that. Some of, like, my favorite things in geek fandom spawn off of the original trilogy, and I don't think that I would be the person I am without, you know, the lessons, the Yoda things, the Obi-Wan, you know, mannerisms and things like that, without, you know, having gone through and watched these as a kid. So I think they're great, and I can't say it better than the fans did.
Yeah.
But this is why we do the podcast, so I'm all right with that.
Matt?
The one thing I think of that's actually really, that's funny, is on a episode of Legends of Tomorrow, when literally they basically go back in time and mess with George Lucas, and they basically cause him not to write this, and then you see basically half the team fall apart, because they actually lose all of their, like, degrees and their ability to do anything.
Just kind of, like, that's right.
Because they basically have to, like, hunt him down, like, please write this movie so I'm inspired to go be a scientist.
And then be a superhero.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right on it. Like, that's a perfect analogy for, like, why it matters. You're totally right, Matt.
Yeah, that is... God. If you don't watch the show, but you like Star Wars, just go back and watch that.
Yeah, it's, like, so that well is perfect. Done. I mean, even though the actor they choose for young George Lucas looks funny, but
still. I wanted to tell you about that episode so bad when I first saw it. I was like, oh my god, I need you guys to catch up so you guys can watch that episode, because it's so good.
I loved it.
Thanks for reminding me. I'm gonna go watch that episode again, Matt. Thanks.
Yeah, I know, it's phenomenal. I think for me, because I mean, you have to remember when this comes out, right? Like, I was lucky enough to have Buffy and Xena, but at the end of the day, as much as I wanted to be the warrior princess, and as much as Leia was a badass princess, Leia always felt like so much more, because Xena always just punched her way out of things. Like, Leia thought things through. Leia was a tactician, and she saved the guys. And for me growing up, that was really important. It was the way I bonded with my family. And I don't think I would have ever bonded with my family or even have been the little tomboy that I was. Or it'd be, I don't think I would not have gotten my master's degree if it wasn't for Star Wars. I can solidly say that. Because when I saw the intricacies of the fandom that I love so much, and also the intricacies of the material that I love so much, it got me curious to find out more and to write and to see more of this, you know, and see what I can contribute. Because I got 2 degrees thanks to Star Wars. Thank you, Star Wars. But yeah, no, I wouldn't be the person I was without Star Wars, in all honesty. And I know if you follow me on Twitter, I've been ranting about how horrible the fandom has been. But I think it's safe to say that, like, not all the fandom is bad. Like, there are just, we're just very, I heard somebody describe it the best today. They called it the super extra community. Like, when a movie comes out, everything is amplified times 10. And so, like, I understand that. But I will say that, like, I wouldn't have met you, Adrian, if we hadn't bonded over Star Wars.
Yeah, that's completely accurate.
Like, we wouldn't have this podcast. Like, Star Wars, to me, was, like, a really big gateway to meet people.
Yeah, I think it's completely accurate. Like, we've talked about this in a few other franchises, but I think out of all the franchises we've talked about, you know, things like Transformers, Pokemon, things like that, like, this is the genre that, or this is the franchise that, literally transcends generations now. Like, there is not a generation out now that I don't think grew up around Star Wars at this point. And I think this really goes to show when we did a Star Wars bar crawl during the opening weekend of The Last Jedi, and everybody was out there doing lightsaber battles, like adults, kids, old people, everyone was out there just enjoying Star Wars. I think it's a relief having gone through the Twitter storm that is Star Wars Twitter when a new movie comes out. Yeah. So despite all of that, like, face-to-face fan meetings is still, I think, some of the best that I have when it comes to talking about fandoms and things.
And I will say too, like, the group that I'm in, we came together around building up the Star Wars Representation Matters hashtag, and that group stayed together, and we've been supporting each other. We talk about our lives, we talk about Star Wars too, but, like, I wouldn't have met these wonderful people if I didn't have Star Wars to connect with. I love all Star Wars things and people, and I'm, like, emotional because I really love Star Wars, but that's it.
I don't know why you're looking at me.
Yeah, we need to go find that video of Kate crying when Mark Hamill.
Yeah, that kind of realized her life, all, doesn't it?
Realized she was in existence. Yeah, that's all I've been thinking about. Is, like, you want to know how much Star Wars means to Kate? Like, let's go to the videotape.
Should I insert the audio?
Let's do it, because it's one of my favorite videos ever.
You're welcome.
But yeah, so thanks everybody for listening, and as always, you can find the podcast at But Why Though PC on Instagram and Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/butwhythoughpc, and our website, butwhythoughpodcast.com. Just a reminder, we are going to be doing an AMA for our 50th episode. Send us all the questions you can think of. We will answer them. And for every question you send, you will be dropped into a random drawing to get a goodie box. And that goodie box will at the very least have a shirt and some other things.
Please send individual questions to all of us, or I will be a cardboard cutout for this episode.
As always, you can find me at OMythRandier on Instagram and Twitter. Adrian?
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReuse93, SuperRuiz93. If you've gotten this far in our series of Star Wars episodes, thank you for, you know, listening to all of our episodes on Star Wars. It's been a blast.
And
this is Pod Racing.
Matt?
You can find me on the Twitter at DatM18, DATTM18. And you also need to unmute all of your Star Wars stuff so you can actually see all of our Star Wars episodes that have been lost in the mute void.
Yeah, so go check your filters.
Also, I will have two episodes that are non-Star Wars related being released for all of you that are like me and exhausted from Star Wars.
Okay, and we're going to go out with seagulls.
You can go out with seagulls.
I love seagulls. And I'm rolling on all my eggs. I'm swapping.
Yeah.
My seagulls on my head and... Stop it now. Said seagulls gonna come, poke me in the coconut, and they did, and they did, had me going like, ah.